Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
104.3 The Fan presents Big Al and D-Mac with the big story of the day.
Well, the big story of the day is easy. There's growth at the quarterback position by the starter, and that starter is Case Keenum. He's made sure that he is ready to go by making sure that he masters this playbook, and he looks wonderful throwing the football, Pritch.
Okay,
even though the king is here, and he's thumping the ball as a punter, but it's clear that Case Keenum understands this, what's at stake here, and he looks like he has put the work in to understand up to this point what's asked of him as the quarterback of the Denver Broncos. He looks smooth.
You know what, Big Al? What stands out to me is that Case Keenum ain't here to fill a roster spot. I mean, he's not here to be a bridge, at least in his mind, to whatever situation the Broncos want in the future. What he wants to do is build upon what he did and what he established last year. The guy went to the NFC Championship game, man. I mean, he came that close to getting to the Super Bowl and experiencing that feeling. So I think Case Keenum and the Broncos chose each other, and they want to make it work. And making it work, to me, is a playoff appearance.
I don't know if that's enough for me.
Okay.
I really don't think it's enough for me because, Pritch, this receiving core is just unbelievable. Everybody knows that Sutton, our talented second-round guy, is a great pickup. He's a 50-50 jump ball guy. He had a jump ball. He had two jump balls a day in practice. They were just awesome. And then on top of that, I seen the young fella, you know, Deshaun Hamilton, run right past Roby playing cornerback. And I just thought, you know, this looks great. But the guy that – and I want to talk with you about this because this is the guy that I'm still trying to figure out how he really fits in this grand scheme of things. Isaiah McKenzie is so sudden. He is so sudden and so quick and so explosive. He jumps on defensive backs so quick. His route running is nice, and I'm just – he just looks like a terrific player for a guy who was relegated last year to basically be a punt return, kick returner. Can a guy who is his size, I think he's right around 5'7" or so, be a real threat in this league at wide receiver?
He can be a threat in a role, in a defined role.
What does that look like? Like, give me a person that I can say – you know, a smaller receiver that has a huge impact on a team.
Oh, man. Edelman. You're going to go right to what New England does with those little guys. I mean, you are going to go right there. Tyreek Hill. I mean, he's another guy. He's not that small, but, you know, he's a small, quick guy. I think Tavon Austin, Dallas is kind of happy about his ability. Now, see,
he really hasn't evolved into the guy that, you know, everybody thought that he would be.
And I don't know if Isaiah McKenzie is going to turn into this elite route-running receiver, though. But what he is elusive. And what you do with a guy like that is you get the ball to him quickly. You get it out of the quarterback's hands. You set it up to where you can get the ball to Isaiah McKenzie quickly and then let him go to work. That's what you want to do. You want to bring back that run after the catch element to your offense, and especially if you're in man-to-man. I mean, as an offense, Al, for us to get to the perimeter was an advantage. Because there's fewer bodies. We didn't have to deal with you. We didn't have to deal with the linebackers. We didn't have to deal with Von Miller. We didn't have to deal with the box that way. We didn't want it to deal with the perimeter, the little guys, the one-on-one situation. So I like the fact that the Broncos can be exciting on the perimeter with one-on-one opportunities.
Yeah, I like the one-on-one, but I seem to believe that there will be a player on this team that we're not really talking about that will have a huge, huge impact on this team. I can't think of another player that would have that kind of impact other than Isaiah McKenzie. I mean, I can't think of nobody else that could be a surprise guy that could you know, give this offense a shot in the arm.
So you don't think the rookies will surprise people? I mean,
no, I think we around here mm-hmm. think that collectively as members of the media think that we have two young receivers that were a part of this last NFL draft class that will end up having a lasting impact on this team far beyond just this year.
Okay.
I'm looking for somebody who is just the right type of excitement for a team that really needs exciting plays. And I'm looking at, man, listen, when I say that Sutton is a great 50-50 jump ball guy, man, they just toss him up the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't even look like there's a route involved.
Envision him in the red zone. Put him
exactly,
in the red zone.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. I mean, envision him on third down and four. They just say, "Hey, man, we're just gonna throw it up to you, and let's see if you can get a first down."
Better yet, with DT on the field, with whatever the tight end,
he's gonna get a 1-on-1.
He's gonna get a 1-on-1, probably against the third corner, probably against some nickel guy that's gonna have his eyes wide open because he's got to cover Courtland Sutton. He's not gonna be able to do it. I mean, that's the matchup edge that the Broncos are slowly creating. And it's not so much about replacing people. I mean, I hope Emmanuel Sanders is on the field at the same time.
He looks great. He looks great.
Yeah, put him on the field, put DT on the field, and put Courtland Sutton on the field. And then give me three corners that you match up with that they think that they can match up with against the Broncos. I don't know if there's three corners in the league outside of the Rams. You know, outside of, you know, maybe Seattle might think that they can still get there. Outside of the Rams, I don't know another secondary that could match up against a DT, an Emmanuel Sanders, and a Courtland Sutton type of player.
Jacksonville Jaguars want a word with you.
Yeah. You know what? The San Diego Chargers would like a word with you as well.
Well, I'll have a word back with them for sure.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, what we have here is unstoppable. I'm just looking for new and exciting ways to get Isaiah McKenzie involved, because something happened in practice today that I just shook my head. He bobbled a punt return.
Mm-hmm.
He bobbled, I think it was the first or second punt of the practice. Ball came up, you know, dropped in his hand. The ball moved a little bit, and you go, remember that. I remember that. Of course, he didn't let it hit the ground, but it just moves ever so slightly. And I just kept on finding ways to say, okay, this guy's probably not going to be our punt returner. Can he still make the team?
Okay.
And I'm saying the guy, I mean, I can't imagine having a weapon like that. And then Philip Lindsay, man. Philip Lindsay is going to make this team.
He should have been drafted.
He's going to make this team.
I know. He should have been. Philip Lindsay.
He is getting all kind of run out there with the ones and twos. And of course, he's getting runs with the threes. But he's going to make this team.
Al, I love this story, too, man. Because Philip Lindsay, one, should have been invited to the combine. If he goes to the combine and he shows out the way that he did for this pro day in front of Denver Broncos, in front of John Elway, in front of everybody, then he's drafted. I mean, how do you pass over somebody like that, one, at the combine, and then two, throughout the draft process? Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think Philip Lindsay not only makes the team, but he makes an impact in some way. If he doesn't make the impact, and he say he's a practice squad guy, he's going to push somebody, though.
You know what? I'm saying that. As a punt returner, he looks solid. As a kick returner, he looks solid. As a running back, he looks solid. He runs routes. He catches the football.
Yeah.
I don't understand how, you know, D'Angelo Henderson may be more on the bubble than Philip Lindsay after it's all said and done.
Nobody's really talking about him.
Not really. Not really. Because Philip Lindsay is involved in all the other return games, then when you see him out there, it's not a surprise that he's on the field. When you see D'Angelo Henderson and you see him with the offense, you say, oh, there he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But it seems that you just keep on seeing Philip Lindsay show up here, 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 there. And then you go, oh, he's just an integral part of the team.
Right. You know, undrafted free agents or even lower round draft choices, I mean, it becomes really about the more you can do. You know, if you can just do only one thing, well, you better do that at a high level. Mm. You know, if you're a lower round guy or undrafted guy, but you better do other things or multiple roles on a team. Look at Chris Harris Jr. The guy can play inside, he can play outside, he can play safety. He's just highly versatile. Mm-hmm. And so that's why he's an all-pro type of player. I think Philip Lindsay is one of those guys where you can run routes with him. You can line him up as a halfback.
Yes.
You can put him on special teams. He'll flourish there. So the more you can do, the more chances you create for yourself to make the team.
I'm also wondering about the reason I just brought up McKenzie is because, you know, it's been when we had Trendon Holiday here, he created such a buzz about his punt return skills that, you know, he kept us in that game against the Baltimore Ravens.
Right.
You know, the guy was just absolutely special. But that's all he was here. He was not a running back. He was not a wide receiver. I'm wondering, can Bill Musgrave etch out a position for him where he's viable, even if he's not the returner? Because it does look like Philip Lindsay could be our punt returner.
Okay.
I mean, think about this now. Talking to Mike Kliss today about our new kickoff rule and what will happen. And for all of you fellas out there that may have forgotten about the new kickoff rule, is there is no running start to when the ball is kicked. You have to go from a dead stop, and when the ball is kicked, go. Okay? So what ends up happening is that you lose around 6 yards or return yards because you don't have that momentum built up. Okay, so when I'm saying 31 yards, okay, at a bare minimum is going to be the new start line. And then I add in 4 yards of, you know, I'm saying that the ball is going to be at the 40 all the time.
Okay.
Is there a way to utilize a guy who is a gadget guy, a speed guy, like Isaiah McKenzie, enough for him to just make the team just for those purposes?
There is, but he's also going to have to do more, I believe, because
not going to be on your kickoff team.
Okay, then
he's not going to be on your kickoff return team.
Then them doors are closing in because
he's not going to be on your punt team.
So just on offense.
He's going to be on offense.
Well, I can do that with Philip Lindsay then. I mean, why would I need Isaiah McKenzie?
He's so fast.
Isaiah McKenzie?
Is he so fast? He's so sudden.
I mean, he jumps
on top of people.
Right.
You know, I can imagine like the, you know, pick routes with him where teams that want to say you're playing against a team like the Broncos who want to lock up man to man with Isaiah McKenzie, and somebody's going to be on the opposite side from the Denver Broncos. When you got Big Sutton outside, right? You got a second round draft pick Sutton outside. You got Demaryius Thomas. You have Emmanuel Sanders, and then. You're right. How do you not put in that moment? I think Jake Butt's going to be a huge part of this offense, so he's going to be on the field.
Right.
So you have that. That's four eligibles, and then you have a running back who's going to be Philip Lindsay, who can do the same things. You know what? Man, he's got to be the returner to make this team.
The more you can do. Al, he's in a situation, the more you can do. Plus, don't forget.
He is, man. I mean, as a ball player, man, I just look at that guy, I just go, man, I'd love to have, you know, two or three of those kind of guys on offense just to scare the crap out of defense.
And why do you think VJ and everybody else over there wanted the guy to get it? Because they know what kind of suddenness he has.
Right.
All he needed to do was field the punt, though. Don't muff it up. But he couldn't do that. And I think that has jaded people. I'm not going to look outside of Isaiah McKenzie's ability because I go back to the days of Dante Hall. I go back to the days of, you know, the human joystick
right.
and stuff like that. And, you know, there was a role for him in KC, but you know, he was
But it never really got developed fully,
No, Tavon Austin's the same thing. I saw Tavon. I covered a game of his. I called a game of his when he was at West Virginia. And you couldn't cover the guy on the field, man. I mean, he was just so electric. You get to the National Football League and it changes. One, because he's not a route runner receiver. He's a run after the catch guy. And that's what they did at West Virginia. You know, the bubble screens and stuff like that, the quick throws. You can do that stuff with Isaiah McKenzie. It's just, I think he needs to do more too in order to take up a valuable roster spot right now. And that's the thing about the Broncos. That roster is valuable real estate, Al. They 5-11, man. They can't have projects. They can't have people that's not going to contribute and help them get out of 5-11 misery. They need playmakers. They need difference makers. They need impactful players. And I'm talking about all three phases. I'm not just talking about offense. So to me, I think it's a highly, highly competitive situation, and we'll see how it plays out.
Now, as far as the NFL goes, just to give you just an example of the type of size that we're dealing with Isaiah McKenzie, he is tied with two other players for being the shortest NFL wide receiver last year. There was also a kid by the name of Tommy Lee Lewis, who played for the New Orleans Saints, and Jakeem Grant, who plays for the Miami Dolphins. Now, the tallest guy is Tanner McAvoy? Yeah, Tanner McAvoy and Brandon Coleman from the Saints. Both of those guys are 6'6". Look, man, that's a huge difference. You start smiling and I start laughing. But, I'm telling you, historically speaking, he is one of the smallest guys to have ever played in the NFL.
Right.
But he's so fast.
Is he Tyreek Hill fast, though? Because Tyreek Hill, to me, from the Kansas City Chiefs,
but he's a little bigger though. Tyreek Hill is,
yeah. But he's bigger and he's faster, more sudden, quicker, and all this stuff. And so that package right there is something that Andy Reid and AB is going to use on offense. You don't want him playing special teams. You don't need him playing special teams. I go back to Devin Hester. I mean, if Devin Hester could have even played one bit of wide receiver, What is his career look like? He's a Hall of Famer in my eyes as a returner.
Tyreek Hill is 5'10".
I know. Isaiah McKenzie is
5'7".
I know. Barely. He might have stretched up to 5'7".
He's 5'7".
I know.
I mean, I'm saying it because
it's tough.
That's how quick he is. That's how sudden he is. But one little bobble, you say, we'd let Phillip Lindsay do that.
Yeah,
it's such a great, I'm saying all of that to say that it's such a great wide receiver group. Emmanuel Sanders is as smooth as he's ever been.
That ankle's not bothering them.
Yeah, DT looks great. You know, you talk about the two rookies and then you have this outlier. He's a legitimate outlier. And if D-Mac was here, he'd be saying, he just needs to catch the football. But I'm saying that everybody who touches this ball on this offense, and they had some of their quick packages going today, like blitz beaters or man-to-man beaters, the quick rubs and the fade, the quick screen. And you see all those plays, and he was part of that series of plays as well. And you go, golly, man, if they could just, they're playing man-to-man. He just runs, just a quick rub off of here, and the ball's in the air, like half a second. Like not even 2 seconds, the ball's in the air and it looks like a punt return kind of play.
Yeah,
on the ball is lobbed out there for him.
On the perimeter, run after the catch.
Oh man.
Let that ability emerge. I mean, really you have to be excited about the ability of Isaiah McKenzie. Really. I just feel like the Broncos, okay, for instance, how many receivers are you gonna keep this year?
You gotta keep at least at a bare minimum, you gotta keep at least six.
How many running backs are you gonna keep this year?
I think you keep three.
Okay, so that's
including. Right. I don't think Andy Janovich makes the team.
Okay, so tight ends, three, four,
at a bare minimum three,
and then what? Nine offensive linemen. I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're starting to run out of numbers,
right?
Because all these people are going to contribute in some way, some fashion. I root for Isaiah McKenzie. I do because I want to see a guy succeed. I don't want to see Isaiah McKenzie go out that way. I don't want to see the lasting impression of Isaiah McKenzie is a guy who didn't run out of bounds and against Washington, and then certainly a guy who muffed a punt a lot and then had everybody under stress, under duress. Because
he got a special teams coach fired.
Right.
There's no doubt about it.
Right. So I don't want him to go out that way. I mean, I really don't care.
This is a hard luck league.
It is.
You know, if that guy screws up, that means it opens up another position for another guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I really don't care about that. But it's just, do you make concessions so that you can, you know, like I'm thinking about, as a defensive guy, when I see a certain type of player in the game, I'm immediately alerted that this is his package. Like Isaiah McKenzie,
right.
Quick screen.
Right.
You know, reverse. But can you also run other types of plays besides a quick screen and a reverse, and he can be effective?
Yeah, I think
because
so.
If we're not going to go, I don't think we're going to go four wides. I don't think that we're going to ever be, maybe sometime, maybe I'm saying four wides. If we are going four wides, when we say we're going to go four wides, I would say that we're going to be in four wides less than 40 plays all year long.
See, what you talked about, too, is that's not a lot of plays right there.
No, that's what I'm saying.
But what you're talking about.
Against some teams yeah. Who only have three cornerbacks. Four wides is a great package to be
in. It really is. That's them creating matchups, though.
Right.
But what you talked about, too, with Isaiah McKenzie coming in the game, you're alerted to what? A gadget.
Gadget.
And so, to me, that's an offense tip in their hand. Isaiah McKenzie's coming in. Oh, they're running a gadget. Be alert for a gadget play, whether it's a reverse, whether it's RPO, whether it's whatever.
But then you throw a jump ball over there to Sutton, okay. Because he's going to get one-on-one.
So Isaiah McKenzie, the decoy.
Like Isaiah McKenzie comes in the game, immediately you think it's going to be – we have to play zone because
mm-hmm.
He'll blow us apart. If you play man-to-man with him with your fourth corner,
right.
Imagine him stretching the field.
Right.
I mean, it's over.
Yeah. One of the things I think we need to point out, I'm going to point out, is don't look at the size of the receiver a lot of times.
And 5'7", Pritch. Come on, don't do that. Come on, man.
I'm going to do that because you know who was the leading receiver in the playoffs last year? Danny Amendola.
Not 5'7".
What is he? 5'8"?
Not 5'7".
5'9"?
Not 5'7".
He ain't 6'8"?
He's not 5'7".
He's not 6'4".
He's
not Julio
Amendola.
Jones.
I mean... 5'11".
Okay, so four
He's
more
a giant. He's a giant.
4 more inches.
Look, man, you have to think about that one. 5'11". He's a giant, man.
Come on, man. That's not a giant.
Look, man, we got the big three at 3:30.
That's not a giant.
Just interesting observations. Interesting observations today because that receiving core is so deep, it's going to be hard to find a way for guys that are talented to make the team. Big 3 at 3:30 is next.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222. The phone number, SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
It's Big Al and D-Mac with the Big Three, presented by Sam's Number 3 Diner and Bar.
Let's go with it, Pritch. I am excited about today's show because there's a lot of excitement around the world of sports, and I'm going to start off by bringing the story to light that is out there that's floating around right now about Paul George, because I do believe that this could signal where LeBron James goes, because he's certainly going to play with veterans and he's going to be in a situation where he is going to be comfortable. At the bare minimum, we understand those things. There was a esports convention in Los Angeles, and of course, my man Paul George is from the L.A. area.
Right.
Was hanging out with Josh Hart, who is a Laker rookie, and they both have an affinity for Fortnite, the video game.
Mm-hmm.
And they were at this esports event and just walking around and talking, started speculation about, hey, there he is, Josh Hart and Paul George hanging out. Next, we'll have LeBron James in Los Angeles. If Paul George goes to the Lakers, does that start free agency and LeBron James is absolutely next?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Paul George is a domino. You know, he's a
it's
big
not
domino.
LeBron. It's not LeBron. It's Paul George.
I think the first domino could be Paul George, more so than LeBron. LeBron's going to have the decision in his rear view, really. I mean, the point of it, Al, is that LeBron had this debacle last time when he made that decision.
Right.
And, you know, I love what he did for the Boys and Girls Club and all the money he raised. But I think from a perception standpoint, people didn't like it. They didn't like the optics of it. But Paul George, L.A., yeah, go ahead and scribble in that LeBron James is going to follow Paul George.
Gary Payton already threw speculation out there and fueled the NBA circles around whether or not LeBron was going to be there by saying that he thought that LeBron would be with the Lakers as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of things that point to the Lakers. Maybe because they have a great guy at the top of that organization, Magic Johnson, that may signal that the Lakers may be on the rebound.
Right. Magic Johnson is the closer. I mean, you're LeBron James.
Like John Elway is the closer.
Pretty much. You're LeBron James. I mean, you want to be the best player on the planet, which you are. And then you have this guy who's the closer that can lure you, that's going to do everything possible to help you win a championship.
Right, right. You need to trust that guy.
You do. And I think he does.
Okay. Bongos.
Three.
Al, everybody's talking about DeMarcus Ware. D-Ware being back over there at Dove Valley. He's hired as a consultant slash coach to mentor these players. You're the best person to ask this question to. What is it like? What are these players going through? A Bradley Chubb who's getting mentored by a guy like DeMarcus Ware, or even some other younger player that can get the knowledge from a DeMarcus Ware?
Well, it's always great having guys who can explain the position at an expert level. Most of the time, those are coaches. And the fact that DeMarcus Ware has been summoned to the Denver Broncos almost seems to echo the fact that there is no expert who can coach Bradley Chubb. And I always think about this. If you had to put DeMarcus Ware in a category, a Denver Bronco or a Dallas Cowboy, you say he's a what?
Whew.
To me, that's
Dallas Cowboy.
Yeah, he's a Dallas Cowboy. Why isn't DeMarcus Ware in Dallas?
I don't know.
You know, why isn't he there helping out the Dallas?
Yeah.
That's something that I struggle with a little bit because he's been such a great player for so long. Mm-hmm. And I know he won a championship here with the Broncos. But it also screams that the Broncos haven't done enough to either hire DeMarcus Ware as a full-time guy, or they haven't placed another coach who's competent enough to work with a guy as talented as Bradley Chubb.
Right. I like what you said there because, I mean, as a player, if you're Bradley Chubb and okay, I don't want to clown a position coach, but name me a position coach that's like Bradley Chubb, or name me a position coach that can identify with what Von Miller can do. That doesn't exist. I mean, it's rare.
Oh, sure, there are coaches out there.
You sure?
Great coach.
That understands that athletic ability.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have great coaches in pro football and college football that understands the outside linebacker position.
But the nuances, though.
Yeah, of course. But the thing that is a little troubling here is that at any moment, DeMarcus Ware could say, you know what? I think I'm going to go to Europe for 6 months, and I'm not going to do this football season. Mm-hmm. It's clearly a hole in the coaching staff that he's here.
Right, but I see the trend of, like, you know, Chad Brown going through the internship. And
yeah, but you're
Kevin
not going to get
Green.
Peyton Manning to come and help out that with the quarterback.
Right, because Peyton Manning's on
so
know, ownership level kind
no,
of
so
thing.
But I mean, as far as a player goes, DeMarcus Ware is on the same level.
Okay.
Like, you need to hire that guy. And if he doesn't want the job, then hire somebody else. You need to have an outside linebackers coach. They don't have one right now.
Yeah, they're settling on this DeMarcus Ware kind of situation. I mean, that's what they're going with. But I like it because
I don't.
I think, well, the thing about those nuances and that influence, because I was going to ask you the follow up. You know, along your career, was there a guy as a player at the same time or a coach that mentored you?
It was Dwayne Board. He was a former defensive end for the San Francisco 49ers, and that machine when they started going, who actually taught me how to play football the right way at the NFL level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was he was a former player, but he was also my coach, and he really taught me how to play at the NFL level and the speed that was necessary. And I thank him for it every time I see him.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me, I mean,
Pee Wee.
Well, yeah, but my position coaches, you know, they didn't understand my athletic ability in terms of what I'm capable of. I mean, they knew I could execute and all that stuff. But with the nuances that helped me develop, I'm talking about Andre Rison, a player. I'm talking about Drew Hill, a player. I'm talking about those type of nuances that they've experienced that they can give to me. Mm. And I think DeMarcus Ware is going to provide that to these players.
Should be a full-time guy.
Okay.
Quickly, Bongos.
Three!
How do you feel about Terrell Owens working out with Julio Jones? Is that good for the Atlanta Falcons or really bad for them? Because Julio Jones is not in the mini camps.
Julio Jones, he should be in the mini camps. He really should. I mean, I think
he wants a new deal.
He wants a new deal. This is his leverage play. I'm not mad at him working out with Terrell Owens because Terrell Owens, there's one thing you can say, the man was in shape.
Oh, always.
The man got ready for the season.
Always in terrific shape.
And he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, I think if he can give something, here we go with nuances, something more to Julio Jones that takes him to another level, okay. But I don't want Julio Jones to change, though. I mean, I'm hoping that he does not become Terrell Owens, you know, in the attitude in terms of what happened in the locker room with Owens.
It seems like this is very similar to what the Broncos are doing with DeMarcus Ware, except the Falcons aren't employing Terrell Owens.
It does. It does feel that way, Big Sexy. And, you know, I don't think that I look at Terrell Owens as a special freaky kind of wide receiver, and I look at Julio Jones in the same light.
Right.
I think if you're going to work out, you work out with the best people that you can work out with. He can't pick a better guy to work out with than Terrell Owens, but there's something about that relationship that feels toxic. Like there may be, is T.O. telling him, I wouldn't go in there until I got all of my money.
I hope not, man. Julio Jones is going to get his money. I hope that's not going to be the case. The thing about Julio,
I love me some meat.
Right. And I got to go back to when Alabama and all this and all these wide receivers, you know who was involved with that program back then? Chris Carter.
Oh.
Chris Carter was schooling because I think his son, before he went to Canada, his son was running around the SEC a little bit. And, you know, Chris Carter was a guy that reached out and had camps and everybody, all these younger players, when went through his camp and they learned the nuances of the game from a guy like Chris Carter, which is crazy, Al. But, you know, I there's nothing wrong with it. I think T.O. knew how to prepare himself and clearly as a Hall of Famer played it at the highest level. Julio Jones is on that path. He's going to be a Hall of Famer someday. But I would love to see him reach some higher heights, and maybe Terrell Owens can get him there.
All right. Well, Bongos and close it up. And we have some big, big news. Huge news that we have to talk about on the other side. There's no way I thought this would happen, but it's happened. We'll tell you about it next on The Drive.
It's The Drive right with now. Big Al and D-Mac on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about now. The Funk Soul Brother. Check it out now. The Funk Soul Brother. Right about
welcome
now.
Back to The Drive. The Funk Soul Big Al and D-Mac. D-Mac's out. Right Mike Pritchard is sitting in with me. My friend. My homeboy, and of course, my teammate. Man, I tell you what, something big has happened, and we didn't talk about it at the in the Big Three at 3:30, but I thought this was a huge get for us. Pritch, we have a World Cup that's coming to North America. Okay, it's going to be the U.S., Mexico, and Canada in 2026. And Denver is among the finalist cities in the U.S. to be a host city for one of the games.
Big
now,
move.
Now, it is such a huge feather in our cap that we are in consideration for something like this. But I'm hopeful that it works out for us. But listen to this. To be a host city for the World Cup and and its games involving FIFA, the stadium must hold at least 80,000 people.
What are you laughing at? What are you laughing at?
How?
You talking about Mile High? We're a little bit short, Al. Mile High, I think, is a little bit short when it's expanded, because you're talking about a soccer, a pitch. They call it a pitch in soccer.
Right, right, the game, right.
Then you're talking about that. Those dimensions kind of expanded. So it's not your normal or what you're used to in terms of a football field.
It sounds like what they're after is a college stadium, you know, because an NFL stadium, no, we have at capacity right now 76,125.
Right, right.
But maybe we'll get another one of those games and we can enjoy that time. With the World Cup.
Right. I mean, you're talking about the opening rounds of the World Cup,
mm-hmm.
which is a spectacle in and of itself. And then, you know, the finals. You know, you want your biggest event, the biggest game, certainly in one of those venues, probably L.A. I mean, what is that Kroenke Stadium going to look like out there in L.A.?
Oh, it's going to, you know, it's going to be
right.
more than, I imagine they will be close to 100,000.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
It makes sense.
Kind of like, you know, the females when they won the World Cup and Brandi Chastain and all that. I mean, that was a big event, big stadium, massive amount of people, and that's what FIFA wants. I think the World Cup with opening rounds, certainly I understand that, but Denver has a chance to get all those other rounds, you know, before the finals.
That's right. FIFA actually requires for the opening match and the final match 80,000,
yeah.
but remaining group stage matches, we got the round of 32, round of 16, quarterfinals, and the third place playoff match are all require a stadium to at least sit 40,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the semifinals is 60,000 people. So the literally, Denver is in the running for every other round except for the opening round and the final.
There was a World Cup the last couple World Cups when, what was it, the pool of death? Remember that? And they had all those phenomenal teams in one pool, and I mean, it was in one part of the of a location where everybody got to see all those fantastic teams all at once. I mean, Denver could get a chance of doing something like that when, if you are in the pool round or one of those other rounds, you might get the best teams that are in the World Cup participating right here in Denver.
Do you want that here?
I would love to see it. I mean,
you want that here?
Yeah.
You know what? I want to go to Seattle to go watch it.
Well, I've been to Seattle. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I
want to go.
Seattle.
You know what? I wouldn't mind going to New York to go watch that. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I don't
watch the finals.
You know what? I am such a separatist when it comes to having big events here in Denver.
You don't
I
can
live
them?
Without it. Yeah,
really?
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Why? Traffic?
Just everything. All that it brings, you know, all that it brings to Denver. I'm like, you know, and I know a lot of people. I want the NFL draft here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if we're going to get it. But this is, you know, there hasn't been a list of cities that will actually host these
mm-hmm.
these matches. But there's something about, you know, holding or hosting these huge events that has me really just like, hey, you know what? Kansas City, if you guys get that one, I wouldn't feel that bad.
You know what?
Minnesota, Minneapolis, you got the new stadium. I'll fly over there to go. But I think
so. You never want to see the Olympics or Winter Olympics or nothing like that come to Denver or anywhere in Colorado.
I think I just want to keep this as the biggest secret in the world as long as I can.
Okay, I see what you're saying now.
I mean, the city is fantastic.
It is. I think the secret's out, though, Al.
I don't think so.
There's a lot of people moving here right now.
I was just in Houston last weekend, and one of my cousins asked me, is it still snowing up there? I'm like, yep.
Year round.
It's still snowing right now.
Yeah, it's 20 degrees in the summer, in June and July. Don't come here.
Right.
I hear what she's saying about that. That's still a point. But I think Denver is handling it, though. I mean, as the city expands, infrastructure expands, public transportation expands, you got community. I mean, it's a vibrant time right now around Denver, and in particular Colorado, the state. But I come from a global city, though. So my perspective is that. So the world would always come to Vegas, whether it's Conor, McGregor, McGregor, and then, you know, Floyd Mayweather, or, you know, somebody international versus somebody from the States. We always had those kind of events. And certainly now that they're going to have that stadium, you know, a place like Vegas would love to have.
I go to Vegas. I go to Vegas and go watch it.
A lot of people would too, but man, to have a very competitive pool or certainly competitive teams from a World Cup perspective to play at there at Mile High, I think that would be great for a few days.
Well, it brings up an interesting topic because I've been paying attention to the World Cup, which will be in Russia this year, and these hooligans. I know you've seen these different stories about. The different hooligans that are part of the traditions of soccer, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I was interested to find out that this did not start in Russia. And maybe, you know, Russia is the retaliating force behind many of these matches where there are fights because of some things that have happened in England.
Right.
Where it's really started and everything. Is there going to be anarchy when it comes to the World Cup?
I hope not.
Fights and...
Well, there's,
you know,
always going to be fights. I mean, any event with all the that amount of people, everybody kind of, you know, getting after it and having a good time, and then all of a sudden tempers flare. I mean, there's always going to be a fight. Whether there's a baseball game here in the States. Yeah. it's a mob mentality. I mean, I think people just do that, which they should.
Struggling. But,
you know, I guess you're trying to get right, and then you just get in a fight. But, you know, you hear when soccer and scandal and referees and murder and stuff like that. I mean,
I want to kiss you.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But it revolves around the gambling, I think. You know,
I think people just want to fight.
No, I'm talking about, you know, the crossing the line stuff when you're talking about officials and corruption and hooligans and stuff like that. I mean, that comes
gambling.
Back
to, you're right. Maybe
gambling a bit.
Maybe, but. I mean, I was looking at and cocktails. Right. Yeah, I mean, having a copious amount of alcohol during sporting events. You know, anyway, I'm gonna watch this carefully. I'm saying this, you know, half jokingly about not wanting Denver to be part of it, but you know, I've been looking at all of these stories about Russia and what's gonna happen this summer with FIFA. And one of the things that just like jumped out on the screen with me while I was doing this research is that Russia will have little to no protection for the LGBTQ community.
Okay.
And it was almost said to those that are participating or that will have gear like that. Don't bring it to Russia, you know, and it's a dangerous stance. And so. I'm worried about people before the event even happens, and I hope that it's going to be smooth. But I don't know. It feels like, you know,
some type of conflict.
Something's
going
to happen.
Right,
I feel. I hate to be like that, but it doesn't feel like we are in the safest times. And these stories about these hooligans and these rough riders who are down for fighting anytime, anywhere with anybody because they're not wearing the proper. Clothing gear, or because they represent a different class, I prefer that we just don't have those issues here in Denver.
You know, I understand that, but at the same time, I mean,
I know I can't be afraid.
You
I know.
Can't be afraid because I mean, the World Cup or Olympics, for that matter, you're supposed to unite, right? I mean, unite the world.
You think there's going to be any uniting of the people in Russia this year, this summer?
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, I think the intention of when you do the Olympics every 4 years or whatever, you're supposed to invite the world to your community. But now you're saying you don't want everybody from the world. I mean, you're being selective. That's starting to happen. And one, people are not even shy about it no more. They're just going to come out and tell you, no, I don't want you around here. I don't want that element. I don't want this. I don't want that. But how do you unite, or how do you have these world events when you're going to invite different people from different countries, from different backgrounds, and expect everything to be okay. I mean, I don't know why it's turning into that. I guess that's my problem.
Big deal. We have the North American. We've won the bid for the North American host countries for the 2026 FIFA World Cup. Big deal. It is a big deal. It feels like it's forever from now, but not really. It's going to be huge. Mm-hmm. It's going to be huge, and we're going to all watch this summer. And we'll be intrigued. I don't know if we'll have the vuvuzelas going again like we did there a couple of years ago. But it's going to be something to talk about. And it seems like every world event, we're all watching and looking for a new storyline. But next, we're going to talk about something that happened this past offseason and whether or not one of the greatest players in the league could have been a Bronco.